All right, here we sit again in rural PA. Yes, rural PA, you State College folks. All right, this is not Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. In my old job.
Although downtown is doing its best to replicate.
No, but rural PA. Come on, every now and then a deer gets loose downtown. You ever see those stories like, what's a deer doing here? Yeah, because we live in rural PA. So we want to welcome back to our program Dr. Kyle Kopko from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Dr. Kopko, first off, good morning, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. Now, again, all right, for longtime listeners, we had you on the show, I didn't even look, it's like over a year ago, because we wanted to know more about the center and about rural PA and things that are happening, things that are not happening, and so on and so forth. So let's start from scratch, if we could. Dr. Kopko, tell us about yourself, like what's your background and so on, and then tell us about the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. What is your organization? So first off, tell us about you.
Sure. I'm one of those overeducated people. Let's start there. So I was in higher ed for a decade before I went over to the General Assembly. Did a lot of data analysis, market research, things like that before joining the General Assembly. And the reason why I was approached about this job is because I had a background in political science, data analysis. I understood policy and politics within Pennsylvania. And the Center for Rural Pennsylvania essentially is a think tank that serves both the House and the Senate in a bipartisan manner. So any member of the House or the Senate could call us up asking for information so that way they can help craft legislation. But in practical terms, you know, it's really county commissioners, township supervisors, nonprofit groups, business leaders all throughout rural Pennsylvania that utilize our services the most. Anything and everything. We can put together demographic trends. We can put together economic analyses, economic impact analyses, all those fun things that are useful in the decision-making process. And by our definition of rural, 48 of Pennsylvania's counties are considered rural. So 67 counties in total for the Commonwealth, 48 of them are rural. About 75% of our land mass, about 26% of the population. And some of the listeners who heard me on the show before would probably remember me saying this, but I always like to emphasize how important rural is. If you were to take the population of rural Pennsylvania and make it its own state, it would have a population greater than 21 states and the District of Columbia. So that's how large of a territory, that's how sizable of a population that we're dealing with. And we are the only office in the Commonwealth that's solely devoted to rural issues.
Actually, it's kind of interesting, Doctor. I caught something online the other day from some information source or something. Of the 50 states, Pennsylvania is number 5 in population. Folks, did you know that? We're number 5 in total population. And so, Doctor, when you just toss those numbers out there that rural PA is bigger than almost half the other states out there, I guess I'm not surprised. Now, there's an obvious question. Define rural. What does rural mean? What does that mean?
So we take a very easy approach to this. It's population density. So if you're below the average statewide density, 291 persons per square mile, you're considered a rural county, a rural school district, and for the most part, a rural municipality. There's a few other steps in there for that measure. But that's how we get our 48 counties. So it's just a binary definition. You're either rural or you're urban. We don't break it down further to like suburban or anything like that. We keep it nice and easy.
Okay. When I think about some of those counties that surround Philadelphia, I don't think urban. I don't think rural. There isn't a third. I would think there should be a third category. But no, you don't see that. You don't agree with that.
You know, if we were, pressed to describe this a bit more, it's probably rural versus everything else. So the urban and suburban probably get lumped together. That's probably the best way of conceptualizing it, because a lot of those collar counties, they're a heck of a lot more developed than, say, any of our northern tier counties, for example.
All right. Now, we had you over a year ago, and I didn't go back and, check notes or, any of that stuff. Since we had you on before, just sort of an open-ended general question, as far as rural PA is concerned, have things gotten better? And I'm not even sure what the definition of better is. All right, have things gotten better? Have they gotten worse? What's the state of rural PA right now?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, to be perfectly honest. So we've seen more people coming into rural, moving in consistently over the past few years than moving out. So that's a good thing. Like, if people are voting for with their feet, they're choosing rural communities. And, you know, you can understand why. We have a great quality of life. We have charming towns, good people, outdoor recreation, you know, all the things that we find very appealing about rural. At the same time, you know, we're facing a crisis whenever it comes to our hospital systems and healthcare systems in rural. I'm sure a number of listeners heard about UPMC coal shuttering labor and delivery services. So we certainly have those types of pressing issues that we're trying to grapple with, not just within our office here, but the entire General Assembly is trying to figure out a best pathway forward. So that's the best way I can answer it. It's both good and bad. It's really the issue that determines whether it's a good or bad outcome.
Now, a quick note for folks who aren't familiar. Cole Hospital, which is now part of UPMC, is in Countersport, which is in Potter Township. In my old job, doctor, I drove past Cole, Route 6, a whole bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and yeah, when they announced, no, we're not doing baby deliveries anymore, you're like, whoa. I mean, the hospital is not closing, but they no longer have a maternity ward there, which I guess means people have to drive to Wellsboro if you're pregnant to give birth to your child. But, I mean, are you familiar with that situation?
Yes, yes, very much so. We actually had a legislative hearing a week ago from Friday, and one of our testifiers brought up that very issue. There are a number of counties now in the northern tier into western Pennsylvania where, you know, you have to drive maybe more than an hour if you want to have a baby. And what does that mean for young families who want to move into an area? It's going to be very difficult to attract and retain young families in that situation. So we're, the entire General Assembly, they are trying to figure out what are the, you know, regulatory things that could be eased, any other policies that could help. Could we, you know, maybe borrow some ideas from surrounding states to help with this issue? It's a tough one, to be perfectly honest.
All right, now a follow-up question, Doctor. You just said a couple minutes ago that in rural PA, more people are moving in than moving out. That sounds great. Where exactly? Because, Doctor, this is Scott. With my old job, mm-hmm. I covered central and northern PA. I drove all over the place for my work. And even now, I see numbers continuing to go down. So if numbers are going up, where exactly? Is this the New Jersey border? I mean, where exactly is this taking place?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it is a lot around the Poconos. So that would be the New York, New Jersey border. We've seen an influx of individuals in that area, you know, Pike County, Wayne County, places like that. We've even seen some tremendous growth in places outside of Pittsburgh, like Butler County, too. So it's really a mixed bag. Adams County is growing as well. So basically, if you're near the state line, you're more likely to see an influx of individuals coming in from other areas, normally within a 100-mile radius of Pennsylvania, moving into those locations. If you're in the interior of the state, it's been more declines, unfortunately. It's just that we've had a stronger influx in some of those border counties that I just mentioned, and that, on average, is raising everything. So that brings up another, you know, interesting issue. You know, we have this tremendous regional variation all throughout the Commonwealth. So not all areas are experiencing the same growth patterns. And what does that mean for long-term planning? Because we want to make sure one of our chief goals is ensuring that rural communities across all of the Commonwealth can retain their vitality.
You touched on obviously the healthcare concerns. Is getting services adequate services to these rural communities. Is that kind of the biggest issue that is being addressed, not just health care, but at just other services, just because, again, of the numbers and in some cases the right. distance that you're needing to go? I know we've talked quite a bit over the years about the well, for a while we were talking about cell phone service, and there's still some areas that I don't know if people understand how significant that issue is still in some areas. And then obviously the internet capability in this day and age, those are kind of important ingredients, and we're still not, I would argue, not where we need to be in terms of providing those. Just to name two of the services that I think we
right.
Need to provide for the rural areas.
You're absolutely right. We definitely aren't where we need to be. Cell phone access is still a big barrier. I mean, heck, even if you drive Route 6, that's a U.S. route. You're going to experience some dead zones along the way. And we're still not as far along with broadband deployment as we could be. And even if it is deployed, there's still a number of rural residents that, they don't have the financial means to buy it. So there are a number of issues that are out there, healthcare being one of them. I think, generally speaking, the way government is designed, there tends to be these, very specific programs or solutions. But whenever it comes to rural, we really need to think about a holistic approach. It's really about having vibrant communities, a vibrant economy in an area. If you just focus on one issue, that might move the needle a little bit in the right direction, but that's not going to change everything. So it has to be this multifaceted, comprehensive approach to deal with all these issues at once. And that's why it gets to be so complicated. And then on top of it, rural communities don't have the same economies of scale as you would see in other parts of the Commonwealth. And that often means that it's harder to develop, it's harder to maintain, and it's also harder to get the attention of folks who want to invest. So we have a few things working against us. And I don't mean to sound all doom and gloom, but I think that we also have some really positive attributes about our rural communities that make them such an attractive place. Again, if that weren't the case, people wouldn't be coming to us. And that's really important to keep in mind. We have a lot of good things happening all throughout rural. We have close-knit communities. People can actually get stuff done on the ground and make a difference. You can't always do that same type of scaling up quickly in other parts of the Commonwealth.
Now, Doctor, our friends from Spotlight Pennsylvania, we've had them on a number of times. They had a story just the other day, and you're quoted in the story. And it mentions the Rural Population Revitalization Commission. Ooh, that's a big, long title.
It sure is.
What exactly is that? I mean, we're talking about population. What is this commission?
Yeah, so whenever we released our population forecast about a year and a half ago, and we discussed that last time, forecast showed more overall declines for rural and the Pennsylvania population overall just flatlining for the coming years. There's a number of legislators in the General Assembly, including members of our Board of Directors, that realize that this is a really big issue. And if we don't get our act together and if we don't start thinking about this in a thoughtful way, we're going to have some significant problems. We're going to continue to lose representation in Congress and less federal influence, all these things. So they came together in a bipartisan manner, created legislation that Governor Shapiro signed into law, creating this new commission, the Pennsylvania Rural Population Revitalization Commission. And its job is to not just do research, it's really also to make recommendations in terms of new legislation, regulatory change, and even community best practices on how to address population loss and maybe in some circumstances reverse it, depending on if that's a strategy a community or a region wants to undertake. And I'm serving as the chairman of this commission. It's not just a bunch of government types or anything like that. It's some state officials, some local officials. We have county commissioners. We have school board representation. And we also have private citizens. We have a couple members of Chambers of Commerce. We have the vice president of the Future Farmers of America for Pennsylvania on it as well. So it's some folks who have pretty diverse professional experience from all regions of the Commonwealth coming together to make recommendations on what to do. I referenced this hearing that we had a week ago on Friday. The whole theme of that hearing really was on local capacity issues. Now, I'm sure that you and your listeners are very familiar with this, and we're all, you know, our township supervisors, our county commissioners, and our smallest municipalities and smallest counties, they're wearing five or six hats at a time. You know, they're dealing with a lot. They may not have the staff to plan for, you know, 10 years out for economic development purposes. One thing that we heard loud and clear is that the state has some probably unnecessary barriers in place for funding and support for our rural communities. So I'll give you a quick example. Grant match requirements. So for a lot of municipalities, a lot of counties, a lot of nonprofits, if you want to get a state grant, you have to have some money up front to provide that match. And some programs require up to a 50% match. Well, if you're dealing with a township of a second class or, you know, an eighth, seventh, sixth class county, you know, they might not have the money in their coffers to fund that type of match. So they don't even try. And what ends up happening is that the municipalities and counties that are well off, they have professional grant writers on staff. They have larger budgets. They're able to compete more successfully for these funds. So it just leads to this perpetual uneven distribution of funds. And so we're going to make a recommendation, I think, at our next meeting that the Commonwealth really take a new approach to funding for our rural areas. So that's something that's on the horizon. We also made our first set of policy recommendations for the Commonwealth at this Friday meeting. We just actually sent a letter off to the governor's office and the row officers asking them to assess how they serve rural Pennsylvania. What are their successes in doing so? What have been their barriers, and what could they do differently going ahead in the future, and to document that so that way we can have a Commonwealth that's more responsive to the needs, the distinctive needs of our rural communities. Now, it's nothing earth-shattering, but, you know, given that we have the third largest rural population in the country, I'll say that again, we have the third largest rural population in the country, we haven't really taken a statewide approach to thinking about how we serve rural areas. So hopefully we're getting other members of the Commonwealth to think in that manner so that way our rural communities aren't disadvantaged, they're not overlooked, and we can begin to think about how we serve them as a Commonwealth.
We'll take a break here in just a minute. Doctor, one thing that's confused the heck out of me is grant writing. You just mentioned some counties, they've got professional grant writers. Others, they don't have the funds for that. Shouldn't it just be based on need? You have to write a grant a certain way, and then you win, whereas these folks don't have the chance to do it. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand grant writing. Why don't we just give it to the folks who really need it?
Yeah, and maybe talk to the nonprofits.
Yeah.
We hear this all the time. It's really a fair point. You know, I think at the end of the day, a lot of agencies want to do something and they have just a limited pot of funds. And so they view a competitive grant process as the most efficient way, you know, just speaking based upon their best argument. It's probably the most efficient way of making good use of taxpayer dollars. And I get that argument. But I think that we all know that there are definitely rural communities and under-resourced communities where, you know, maybe a township only has a part-time employee as secretary and treasurer or something along those lines. you know, they're at a pretty strong disadvantage. You know, sometimes there's help from your local development districts in the Appalachian Regional Commission area. Sometimes counties can provide some level of support, but that's not something a lot of folks can count on because that varies from region to region. And that's one of our main concerns here. We got to do better in that regard.
All right, let's take a break right here. Our guest again is Dr. Kyle Kopko from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Yeah, doctor, you got a co-host here whose wife runs a nonprofit. Why are you holding your head? You have a headache or something? I mean, when I mentioned grant writing,
it.
You kind
yeah.
of groaned.
Yeah,
like, oh,
no, it is. It's yeah. amazing.
You're familiar with that. Okay. All right, folks, we're going to take a break here. We have more questions about rural PA. That's where we live. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. We'll come back.
Get that feeling. Get that feeling. This is The Fox.
Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCormick has won it. They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him and he's done it again. Paul Skeens finishes strong.
Every game all season long brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion!
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time. Even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Dodder Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Dodder Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
The Fox! Get up and get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7 The Fox!
It is Let's Talk here on a Wednesday. Jeff and Scott with you again. We'll have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment of this morning's program.
Again, another segment with our guest, Dr. Kyle Kopko with the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Now, doctor, when I was prepping for the interview, went to your website. Let's mention the website, rural.pa.gov. rural.pa.gov. A lot of information there. Now, Doctor, I noticed one thing that was on the website. You folks did, I don't know, listening sessions or something back in the fall into, I guess, January, so not that long ago. Now, maybe we echoed some of this stuff in the last segment, but you know, where did you go and what did you hear? Did anything, I don't know, surprise you when you folks were doing these sessions?
Sure, and I'll just say, to lay the groundwork for the Population Commission, we wanted to make sure that we were hearing from stakeholders on the ground. We just didn't want to get together and, you know, think, oh, I have an idea, let's pursue this. No, we wanted to really make sure that we heard from as many voices as possible. So we partnered with the local development districts all throughout the ARC region, the Appalachian Region Commission, and then also some of the electric co-ops for the rural counties that aren't part of the ARC region. And we basically asked the local development districts to invite county commissioners, economic development professionals, business owners, anyone that they thought could show up and have a discussion on what are some of the big issues facing their region. And there's a lot of common things that were raised, as you might imagine. Housing almost was the number one issue that folks brought up every time, broadband access, healthcare access. Now, what was surprising, you know, those issues are, you know, probably familiar to a lot of folks, not too surprising, but the underlying cause for those issues being a problem varied from region to region. So take housing, for example. You know, sometimes in a region, the biggest barrier was lack of sewer and water. You have that type of infrastructural barrier. Other times, it would be permitting. You know, DEP lag times was brought up a fair amount. Sometimes there wasn't a developer who was readily accessible in a given area. So, yeah, folks might have a common problem, but the reason why it's a problem was different from region to region. So I think that's really important for folks at the state level to keep in mind. And that's something we constantly have to remind folks of. You know, because Pennsylvania is so large in terms of its geography, our regions are very different. You know, what's true in the Northeast may not be true in the Southwest. So as we're thinking about what's a good strategy going forward, you really need to engage with folks on the ground. You really have to talk to your county commissioners, your township supervisors, your business owners, your nonprofit groups to figure out what's going on in that region and craft strategy that way. Because, you know, oftentimes these one-size-fits-all approaches, they're just not going to work in rural.
All right, I'm going to make my co-host chuckle here.
Oh,
just a general question, Doctor. Is there too much regulation out there? And a lot of this, if it would be cut, we'd be much better off. Now, you may disagree. I don't know what your answer is going to be. Is there too much state regulation, maybe even local regulation?
Or you like me, you think we need more red tape. Please, can we get some more regulations for more people to work through?
Okay, there he is.
No, we don't need more red tape. But one thing that we keep hearing about is we need more flexibility. I mean, you know, obviously, not all regs are bad, but they might be formulated in a way that just doesn't make sense in rural. It might be burdensome, it might be onerous, and we need to look at those. I'm painting with a very broad brushstroke here because there's so many different types of regulations that are out there. And we're also structured in a way where, you know, there's regulations at the local level, the county level, and the state level. So, you know, even in terms of like bringing in, you know, housing development or new employers, you know, I was having a conversation with someone in the business industry just yesterday. Question came up, hey, if someone wants to come in and invest tens of millions of dollars and wants to create a new business in Pennsylvania, what should be their first point of contact? And it's a good question because there's really no right answer to that. You know, we're a very decentralized state by design. And I think that that's, it makes our jobs for rural development and rural policymaking that much more complex.
Okay. See, I knew you would react to that one. My friend Jeff is not a regulation red tape fan. Oh, my God. So why? Okay, is this a Harrisburg thing? Why don't they just do it? I mean, what are the reasons for keeping red tape? That's what people out here, we don't understand. Like, get rid of this crap in front of us so that we can do stuff. Why do they hold on to it?
You know, I don't think it's people in Harrisburg necessarily being, you know, nefarious or anything like that. I think that there's generally not an awareness of how things work in rural communities. I think it's that simple. You know, I've heard from rural stakeholders a number of times, like, how difficult it is to get folks from other parts of the state to go north of I-80 for a meeting. You know, we are so regional in our identities, even within Pennsylvania. And I think that a lot of folks just tend to think that the rest of the state is the same as what it might be in South Central Pennsylvania. And we know that's obviously not the case.
Well, let's see. Lancaster County has Amish, and we have Amish, but that's about the only way we're the same. You know, trust me, we're not the same. Now, I mentioned that Spotlight Pennsylvania story, and the headline at least says, talking about boosting local governments. I mean, Doctor, how do I phrase this question? Is there a problem with local governments that they're just not getting things done, they don't have any money, that's where the main part of the issue is? How much of this is about local governments and what they're supposed to be doing?
You know, I approach this like building a house, right? You know, if you don't have a strong foundation, you're not going to get very far. And when we think about policy implementation or just planning for the future, this stuff happens at the local level. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is the fault of any municipalities in particular or anything like that. It's not their fault. We've structured things in a way where we tend to treat all municipalities the same, at least at the state level, without taking into account, you know, what's their geographic spread, what's their infrastructure like, what's their staffing like, what's their tax base like. You know, we're not advocating for, like, forced mergers or doing away with our current land use system or anything like that. But there are clearly differences in municipalities. Our township supervisors, our county commissioners are working their tails off to make things right. And they just don't have the bandwidth in many areas. And we're trying to get the state to at least, one, recognize that. And for those areas that might need, you know, some extra barriers out of the way, what would that look like? And so back to the grant matches, I know that's not going to, you know, solve everything, but again, our approach has to be, we got to make incremental changes here for a variety of reasons. But if we were to just improve that process, say, hey, if you need help writing a grant, we can do that. If you need, you know, a waiver of a match requirement, we can do that. Recognizing that rural areas don't have all the same things as folks would in, say, the southeast part of the state or the south central part of the state.
Yeah, the other thing, are you seeing more, I guess, creative approaches, maybe above and beyond the grants where, hey, maybe let's get some companies that do a lot of business in rural areas, and hey, can we create a John Deere program here to help supplement X, whatever a given need in a community is? Or can we merge a couple of communities together and go after, you know, monies for services where maybe we could combine some things where maybe we do have some similar needs, at least in a couple of particular areas? Because it does feel like one of the things that I'm guessing here is, again, from a political standpoint, it's like, well, there's a handful of people there. Yeah. Even if I don't get their votes, what do I care statewide?
Right.
And, you know, again, from a business standpoint, if businesses aren't directly in those communities, there might be not a lot of interest. But those people obviously are important to the overall makeup of the state, and you know, for different business services, they're important customers for them.
Yeah, there's a lot packed into that question, and I think you're definitely on to something here. So, you know, backing up, whenever we run into a lot of the same problems here that we do, even just in competitive funding and grants. Like, it's expected that the locals come together, that they invest their time and efforts, but you know, if they're already, you know, dealing with a number of immediate fires in front of them. You know, if they have road issues that they have to deal with, you know, getting all of them on the same page and saying, hey, on top of everything else that you're doing, let's come together and let's start on this business recruitment strategy. You know, in some areas that's going to be possible, in other areas it's not because they're strapped, they're overworked. And I think that, you know, the Commonwealth needs to, one, recognize that, and two, talk to folks in those areas and say, what do you guys need? If you want to pursue a strategy, what's going to be most helpful for you? And tell us. And don't assume that folks in Harrisburg can understand the intricacies of everything that happens on the ground level throughout all of Pennsylvania. I think that has to be our approach. And we're starting to, you know, get folks to recognize that.
All right. This is Scott. Let me jog my brain. That hurts. Let's go back 10 or 12 years. Energy production, natural gas was going to be the salvation for a lot of areas of rural Pennsylvania. Or at least that's, my recollection is that's how it was pitched. Oh, this is going to be, here we go. We got that Marcellus Shale and we're going to make big money and everything's going to boom and so on. And 10 or 12 years later, Doctor, I'm not seeing it. I mean, first of all, did I describe that accurately from a dozen or 10 years ago? And what has happened since then? Because it doesn't, to my...
And the gas tax was supposed to do that. And then the gaming taxes, that was supposed to do that.
Right.
Now marijuana sales. All of these things are going to solve all of these financial issues. And we never
And it
actually,
never seems to happen.
Right.
But let me stick with natural gas.
Right.
What happened?
We had a short-term boom, really, in a lot of areas. And I think that, you know, whenever you look at the work crews and the drilling sites and things like that, the folks who are coming in are generally there for a short period of time. They're not permanent residents. Yeah, they might be living out of hotels or short-term rentals or things like that. But once the job's done, you know, they're moving on to another location, which could even be outside of Pennsylvania. It just really depends. So we didn't see that same type of economic boom from, like, you would expect with, like, a new factory opening up or a new hospital opening or whatever it might be. So I think that that was one pretty significant gap in understanding, like, what happened over time. And I still think that there is promise as if we were to continue to build more power plants themselves. I mean, obviously, in that situation, you need to have a physical structure. You need to have employees on the ground. But we've been pretty slow on that type of development, too, even in recent years. We might be seeing some movement on that end here at the state level this year. Stay tuned. You'll have to wait and see.
All right. I mean, we've been waiting. Again, with my old job.
But no, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
It's a very fair point.
In my old job, sometimes I would go up to Towanda, which is in Bradford County. Mm-hmm. Have a number of friends in Towanda. And that's a big natural gas, or sort of, natural gas area. I remember they built a hotel on the edge of town. But in recent years, Doctor, when I've driven past that hotel, it's empty. There's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think all the guys are out walking, you know, working, and then they come back to the hotel at night. No, there's nobody at this hotel. I'm thinking, okay, mm-hmm. this has been a bust, not a boom.
Yeah, and whenever I was on a drilling site last year, I guess it was, you know, a lot of folks even have the ability to, you know, spend the night there on site, so they wouldn't necessarily be in town. And I'm not sure that, you know, a dozen years ago, folks were thinking in that way. So it was just something that didn't materialize.
Now, Doctor, all right, you mentioned your group, Center for Rural Pennsylvania, think tank and so on, and you have plans, I'm sure, and all this stuff. Is there some, like, ultimate, this is where we want rural Pennsylvania to be? Here's what, when we get to this point, we've made it, or something. Is there some future utopian something vision that says, here's our goal, this is what we want to go to? Is there such a thing?
Sure, utopia is the goal. There you go. But no, honestly, you know, what we're seeing in rural Pennsylvania has been decades in the making. And it's not ever going to be an overnight fix. What we're really focused on is we know what the status quo is going to lead to. We have pretty good data on that. We want to try to at least mitigate as much as possible. And you know, I'm coming at this with clear eyes. We don't have a bunch of money, and oftentimes even having a bunch of money doesn't solve the issue. There's a lot of things that just need to happen throughout new government processes to make them more responsive to the distinct nature of our rural communities and making sure that rural communities have a meaningful feedback mechanism so that way they're not left behind. If we can get those kinds of things in place, it'll move the needle in the right direction. Is it going to solve everything? Nope. No, because we're talking about macroeconomic issues that go well beyond Pennsylvania. So if you even look at, you know, parts of Western New York, Eastern Ohio, West Virginia, you know, down into Kentucky and Tennessee, parts of Western Virginia too. I mean, this is really a regional phenomenon that we find ourselves in. So if we can at least stem the bleeding, first of all, and maybe even get us to a point where, you know, our population was what it was maybe 10, 20 years ago. We're not talking about massive shifts here, but if we can stabilize things and make sure that we have that solid economic base for rural communities and maintain that, that's going to be better than where we're heading based upon the data. So that's I'd say, our most immediate goal. You know, we're giving it our very best shot to make that work.
In that regard, how much is maybe some of the technological advances on the agriculture front? I mean, I guess everywhere, but in particular for rural areas in the agriculture. Because one of the things, at least that we're seeing and hearing around here, is like these generational farming families are no longer a generation. The next generation is like,
right.
Nope. I see
right.
how hard you're working. I see what you're getting profitability wise, and I'm out. And I mean, that's a big part of the equation here, right?
It is a big part for the future of agriculture. You're right, and we've heard this a number of times. This isn't just affecting agriculture, but to case in point, ag workforce is aging rapidly. There are folks that want to transition their farms to the next generation, but the next generation may not want to do that. And there are some folks that want to get involved in farming and in agriculture, but they might not have the capital to do it. I mean, if you have a pretty large farm, that takes a significant amount of money to make that purchase, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, if we do have... We are already at the point where there are some smart tractors and things like that. Some veterinarians are already using augmented reality and microchips in animals and things like that. Like, that's here and now. One of the biggest barriers, though, is having a mesh wireless network connected to a fiber line and good broadband internet to allow those technologies to be deployed. And then even if you do have that in place, does the farmer have the financial means to implement that? Now, if you were to ask our friends in the Department of Agriculture, what are you doing to help with this? They would point to a new fund that the General Assembly approved last year, and it's still up for debate for renewal in this next budget cycle for Agricultural Innovation Fund. No other state in the country, to our knowledge, has something like this, and it's meant to help our ag producers implement those new technologies on their farm operations so they can be more efficient. And hopefully then that eases some of the workforce strains for our ag sector. I can tell you the folks in PDA, the Department of Agriculture, they get it. They're good people over there. I talk to them on a regular basis, and they are really concerned about the future of agriculture because, you know, it's arguably our most important industry in the Commonwealth.
All right, last question here. The last 2 months in Washington, D.C. have been interesting. He says with tongue...
Really? Has something been happening?
Yeah.
I'll be
He says with tongue firmly in cheek. Does any of that affect what you do, Doctor? Or, you know, how much does that affect rural PA? Seemingly every day, something new is tossed out
right.
down there, you know? And I guess that's going to continue. Does that... anything from D.C. affect your work or what you folks are trying to do?
It indirectly affects us. I mean, since we're a state agency, you know, we're tied to the state budget and the Harrisburg government as opposed to Washington, D.C. But, you know, we have heard some issues about farmers not receiving USDA loan or grant payments, things of that nature, just in the holdup and the funding freeze. you know, it's been more anecdotal than anything. Obviously, if there's a major federal employer that closes up shop in a rural community, yeah, that's going to affect the local economy. So we haven't heard a lot of concrete details yet on how this is going to affect all of rural Pennsylvania, because it's still playing out. It's a potential concern, but so far we're still gathering information.
Well, Donald Trump apparently got a free Tesla yesterday, so I'm going to wait for my free Tesla so that I can drive around rural PA.
Perfect.
Dr. Kopko, we really appreciate your time this morning.
Yes, thank you.
Again, the website is rural.pa.gov. A lot of information there. And maybe I need to go into grant writing, because apparently we need more grant writers or something. Yeah. Doctor, thank you again for your time this morning.
Take care.